This podcast is brought to you by Recontract, the leading software to automate your reconditioning process and streamline your entire used vehicle management process. Visit recontract.com to learn more. That's recontract.com.
Want to dive deeper into the topics you hear about on Daily Drive? We're offering listeners a special offer, 20% off a one-year Automotive News digital subscription. That gets you access to all of our news, information, and analysis made for automotive industry leaders like you. Go to autonews.com/dailydrivepromo to redeem. Welcome to Daily Drive for Wednesday, March 20th, 2024. I'm Jamie Butters, executive editor of Automotive News in Detroit.
And I'm Kellen Walker in Las Vegas. Today on the show, the EPA finalizes its auto tailpipe rule. And it's another big win for automakers. California and Stellantis reach a deal on vehicle emissions, and a new mega deal nearly doubles the size of Holman's auto retail business. Plus, Boston Consulting Group's Brian Colley joins the show to talk about what automakers need to do to boost EV sales. Here's a hint, it's not about the environment anymore.
As you move to this next wave of customers, which we believe are out there for the taking here in the next couple of years, it is much more about the vehicle itself.
Let's run through all the news you need to know to keep up in the auto industry.
Yesterday, automakers got a win from the Department of Energy's decision to ease its proposal for electric vehicle mileage ratings for CAFE purposes. Today, they're getting an even bigger win from the EPA. The agency has finalized a rule that sets tougher limits on vehicle tailpipe pollution through 2032, but softens the requirements in the early model years to appease industry concerns about going too fast into the EV transition. Compared with the EPA's proposal in April, the final rule on light-duty vehicle emission standards for the 2027 through 2032 model years adopts a less aggressive pace of greenhouse gas emissions reductions in the first few model years. That will be followed by more stringent reductions after 2030. The agency now projects battery electric vehicles will account for 30 to 56% of new light-duty vehicle sales in the 2030 to 2032 model years, down from the controversial 67% in 2032 that the EPA projected in its original proposal.
Meanwhile, Stellantis and the state of California have reached a deal on emissions after the company unsuccessfully sought to join a deal that other automakers had struck with the state in 2019. The state and Stellantis say the company will comply with California's zero emissions, light-duty vehicle sales requirements through 2030, even if the state cannot enforce its rules. The company will also not oppose California's authority under the Clean Air Act for its greenhouse gas emissions and zero-emission vehicle standards.
Ford is delaying planned three-row EVs similar in size to the Explorer and Lincoln Aviator. Instead, it will focus on smaller, more affordable EVs. That's according to people familiar with the company's plans who spoke with us at Automotive News. The three-row EVs will be built in Canada at Ford's planned Oakville Electric Vehicle Complex. They were expected to go on sale in early 2025. One source said Ford will instead launch an affordable EV on a small vehicle platform as early as late 2026. That small crossover is expected to be built at the company's Louisville assembly plant. The UAW and Ford agreed as part of its 2023 labor contract to add a new EV product to Louisville before the deal expires in 2028, although they didn't specify the timing.
And one of the largest private dealership groups in the U.S. has nearly doubled its new vehicle store count. That's following Holman's completed acquisition of Leith Automotive Group of Raleigh, North Carolina. Holman says it's the largest automotive retail acquisition in the company's 100-year history. Holman is based in Mount Laurel, New Jersey. It now owns nearly 60 franchise dealerships selling 34 brands in 9 states. The group now employs about 4,500 people. The companies didn't disclose terms of the deal. And those are today's headlines. Jamie, what are your thoughts on the EPA's new tailpipe requirements? Automakers yesterday got a big win with the Department of Energy's decision to ease its proposal for electric vehicle mileage ratings. But this win with the EPA seems even bigger.
Well, you know, it definitely is going to help to have the demands placed on the industry eased a little in these earlier years when the charging network isn't really built out yet and automakers don't have all that many affordable EVs to offer. Getting out into the later years, you know, it still looks a lot more manageable, probably mostly because now in this final rule, they also accommodated for the fact that plug-in hybrids are a thing, and those can actually do a lot to reduce tailpipe emission. So when you include those, then even the outer edge is not quite so demanding.
Gotcha. Coming up, EV sales growth may be slowing as automakers reach the last of the early adopters, but Boston Consulting Group's Brian Colley says the next wave of buyers is out there and ripe for the taking. He joins us next on Daily Drive.
Tesla is no longer a luxury brand. At least that's what we've decided here at Automotive News, but we want to hear from you.
What do you think of our decision to no longer classify Tesla as luxury in our coverage? Send us a voicemail, text, or email. You might hear your comment on this week's Weekend Drive episode. Here's how to get in touch.
Call us and leave a voicemail or text us at 313-444-2774. Again, that's 313-444-2774. You can also record your voice on your smartphone and send it to dailydrive@autonews.com. That's dailydrive, one word, at autonews.com.
And tune into our Weekend Drive episode this weekend, available Saturday morning.
Managing your used inventory is not exclusive to one person or one part of the dealership. What does the communication look like between sales and service? Are your vehicles getting passed from trade-in to recon with no hiccups? What is your average cycle time to get a used car frontline ready? There is a lot to keep track of all at once. Right now, you could be experiencing three major issues with your recon information causing process breakdowns. One, lack of visibility into recon pricing to inform the appraisal process. Two, no access to that appraisal information when working through recon approvals. Three, missed information and process bottlenecks trying to manage a vehicle across multiple systems and tools. Full insight throughout your entire process is crucial to making your used car department the most efficient and profitable it can be. Recontract combined with AutoVision creates an end-to-end tool for your used car department to address these breakdowns. With access to live appraisal information and reconditioning approvals, you get a single view of every vehicle with all the data you need right in one place. Make more educated decisions on your used car inventory faster with all your data easily accessible at any stage. Visit info.recontract.com/autovision for more information. That's info.recontract.com/AUTOVISION.
Welcome back to Daily Drive. I'm Jamie Butters with Kellen Walker. Nearly 40% of U.S. consumers say they intend to purchase an EV as their next vehicle, but they expressed strict requirements to make the jump. That's according to a new survey of 3,000 consumers by Boston Consulting Group. EV intenders want 20-minute charging times, a 350-mile driving range, and a price of $50,000. Brian Colley is the global leader for Boston Consulting Group's automotive and mobility practice. We talked about the survey and what it says about how automakers should try to catch the next wave of EV adoption. Brian Colley, welcome back to Daily Drive.
Great. Thanks, Jamie. Always great to be here.
You know, I'm really glad you have this report coming out. You know, the industry is a little bit anxious about EVs these days. The market's growing, but not as fast as the automakers had projected. And the EPA seems to be looking for it to grow a lot faster. So what's it going to take to spur faster adoption of EVs in the U.S.?
Yeah, so maybe just to take a step back, you know, we obviously have not been immune to the news cycle over the last few months. Certainly, we've seen a more bearish sentiment as we've seen, you know, rising interest rates, as we've seen some quality issues with a number of the more high-profile EV launches, all of which have resulted in higher inventory and a relative slowdown in growth relative to what was expected. So what we wanted to do is we wanted to take a step back and really dive into the underlying economics and really ask the question, is the more bearish news sentiment that we're seeing, is this a simple pause on what is overall a healthy trajectory? or is there a fundamental reset of expectations that should be taking place? And what we're excited to see is that while the new sentiment of the last few months is justified, the underlying drivers of the move to battery electric vehicles are as healthy as ever. The regulatory push remains strong. The total cost of ownership, how that's going to change over time, remains strong. The plethora of new vehicles coming to the market that are going to create tremendous options for consumers, there's a lot to get excited about there. The reality, though, is I think that we have had a more difficult environment with the interest rates, with some of the quality issues that have basically exhausted this first wave of adoption. And now for us to really go the next step, it's really about understanding not just what the first movers want, the early adopters, but what is that next era of growth going to want? And we launched some research. We surveyed about 3,000 folks. And what we're finding are a few key things. One is they do want faster charging times, not surprising. They do want to have longer range, not surprising. And they are looking to see a price competitiveness somewhere in the 50,000 range. So none of that in itself is really all that earth shattering. What really stuck out to me is that a very large portion of the market, about 40%, say that for their next vehicle, they want to purchase an EV. They're just looking for certain blocks to be checked. And the great thing is the OEMs, they've still got some work to do, but they're well on the way to be able to meet those needs of these this next wave of growth.
That's a huge potential market there. When you think of the people, 38, 40%, whatever, that are leaning EV or want to buy an EV, that doesn't mean they will buy an EV as their next one. Is that right? They're open to it, but it's if the price is right, if the product fit is right, if the charging is going to work in their life. Is that kind of how it works?
Exactly. I think when you look at the first wave of adopters that we saw over the past couple of years, these are folks that tend to be college educated. They tend to be more tech focused, tech forward, I should say. They tend to, you know, clearly care about the environment. They want to make a statement. They want to make a difference. As you move, though, into this next wave of customers, which we believe are out there for the taking here in the next couple of years, it is much more about the vehicle itself. It's going to be a higher priority on the ongoing cost of ownership. There's going to be a bit more price sensitivity relative to what we see today. And they're frankly looking for less gimmick and more about, give me a superior vehicle, a superior experience. And so we always love to talk about the frunk and how exciting and innovation that was. And, you know, it is a very functional, rational innovation. But what people want is they want a great car. They want a great car buying experience. They want a reliable car. They want something that is going to be able to meet the vast majority of their driving needs with as little inconvenience as possible. And so as we move beyond more of the niche, more of the gimmicky type plays to just a great vehicle with broad segment coverage, we, you know, where I think we're going to see that 30% of the next set of customers emerge.
I wonder, you know, so many American consumers are conditioned to shopping by the monthly payment. Are they ready? Are they capable at looking at total cost of ownership? Is there a change in how vehicles are sold that would help make that connection for them?
Well, certainly the first cost sensitivity is real. And there is a large portion of the market that is not going to be attainable until we get to first cost parity. That's, I think the industry understands that. But from a total cost of ownership, you know, the consumers are pretty rational. And as we can look to better educate them on how the total cost is actually advantage relative to owning an internal combustion engine, if we can make those tools available to them that create that transparency, that's certainly a step in the right direction. You know, I think we're also going to look to see, you know, different type of lease options that allow people to get into a vehicle that they otherwise may not have gotten into, to at least kind of break past that first cost sensitivity. Whereas, you know what, I may not be willing to commit for the next, you know, 3 years, 4 years with a big, you know, monthly payment. But oh, by the way, if you can give me something in the 6 month to 8 month range, I'll be willing to give it a try. And I think a lot of automakers, they need to make a bet on themselves that once they get consumers in their electric vehicle, they'll be able to actually drive some stickiness with that customer that can then translate to a lifelong relationship.
So you're not talking about just, you know, the two, three, and four year leases like we've seen before. You're thinking even shorter leases could really convert people into EV never gassers again.
Yeah, I think it's because, again, this requires OEMs to make a bet on themselves. That at the end of the day, they believe that these EVs that they're developing, and I will admit, some of the EVs over the last few years aren't necessarily EVs that I'd want to be making big bets on. But as we continue to work through those quality issues, as we have better vehicles come to market that actually stand for something, that are offering a differentiated experience within the segment that they're competing, OEMs need to make a bet on themselves. They need to find a way to address some of that first cost sensitivity. They need to get people in these vehicles with the bet that once people get to experience these vehicles, they're going to be able to convert them. So it's going to be, you know, 6 to 8, 9 month leases, you know, are things that we've been seeing a number of OEMs explore. We think that's a level that is going to give customers confidence to, you know what, I can give it a try. Because, oh, by the way, if I don't, it's going to be far easier to break out of that than it would be a 3 to 4 year type lease.
You know, of course, the reason those upfront costs are so much higher is they cost a lot more to build, right? So to reduce manufacturing costs, you know, just last week, we saw the partnership between Honda and Nissan get announced. Do you think we'll see more things like that, more partnerships, joint ventures, possibly even consolidation?
For sure. At the end of the day, scale matters immensely in the automotive industry, especially so when you're talking about battery electric vehicles and a whole new market that's emerging. I suspect that we're going to see not just further joint ventures and partnerships on the vehicle manufacturing side, but we're going to see it through the supply base batteries as well. It's critical. There's too much upfront investment and there's too much individual model risk for both vehicle manufacturers and suppliers to incur on their own. We think a new model is needed. We think partnerships and JVs are a way to drive greater scale. We think there's going to be an opportunity and a need really to harmonize specs where it makes sense. And that's going to be a choice that each vehicle manufacturer needs to make. They need to be comfortable that they can do that in a way that doesn't compromise their ability to differentiate in the market. But harmonizing specs, consolidating the spend, moving towards greater partnerships and capturing manufacturing scale, all that matters. And we are going to continue to see more and more of that through the remainder of the decade and beyond. We also, frankly, need to see a new commercial model between vehicle manufacturers and suppliers. If you look over the last couple of years, the volume risk that OEMs are expecting of suppliers to carry on their own is just immense. It used to be, you know, pre-COVID, for a given platform, you would have annual fluctuations of plus or minus, you know, 10 to 20% of capacity planning volumes. In some cases, you're now having 70 to 80% fluctuations versus what was expected. That's just a very, very difficult thing to put on the supply base on their own. I think we need to find a new commercial construct that better shares that risk across vehicle manufacturers and suppliers and gives the suppliers the incentive to invest in these new technologies, to invest to be the partner that the vehicle manufacturers need.
So where do you see EV market share going in the U.S.?
We remain confident that we should see more than 40% market share of new vehicles sold by 2030. We clearly have a ways to go, but last year, people talk about how difficult a year was. We still grew 30% year over year from a BEV penetration. The problem is it was just well short of the heightened expectations that people had, expectations that were probably too rosy to begin with. We do believe that when you look at the regulatory push and the need, when you mentioned the EPA at the outset of the discussion, how the EPA is expecting something much greater in terms of BEV penetration. Well, if we as a nation are going to combat climate change and deliver against the promises we've made, we have to find a way to address emissions in vehicles. And so we believe battery electric vehicles in the passenger vehicle segment, that's the best path to go. And if you look at the federal level, if you assume that there may be changes there based on election cycles and how outcomes may be there, you still can look to California and other states who have very stringent restrictions. So we feel very good about, from a regulatory standpoint, that pushes there. We're also really excited about the continued advancements we're seeing on battery chemistries. We're excited about the move from NMC to LFP, LFP to LMFP. We think that's going to continue to reduce some of the dependency on more harder to find materials. It's going to allow us to drive better battery, better vehicle performance. So we feel good about that. That's going to help on the total cost of ownership. And then again, we just can't lose sight of all the great new vehicles that are coming to market. And so when you factor in all those factors, we remain confident that 40% is attainable. And I think the last thing I mentioned around the options for consumers, that's an important thing that we don't lose sight of. The missteps that we've had with EVs over the last couple of years, some of the quality issues related to battery management, poor performance in cold weather conditions, I think it's important to recognize that some of the vehicle manufacturers may have got a bit ahead of their skis in terms of the vehicles they're bringing to market. The larger pickups, large SUVs, the battery, you know, performance just, you know, isn't there to support the towing applications, isn't there to support the cold weather applications. And that, I think, does give a bit of a black eye on BEVs as a whole. But if you look at BEVs in segments that have less demanding requirements of the battery or in more warm weather type conditions, I think we feel pretty good about what we're seeing from a quality standpoint. And with all the great new EVs that are going to be coming to market over the next 4 to 5 years, consumers are going to have a plethora of choices. And it's not going to be just about what is the best EV, it's what's the best vehicle. And I think when people ask them that question, they're going to find more often than not, it's going to end up being an EV.
Brian Colley is Managing Director and Senior Partner at Boston Consulting Group, where he leads the automotive and mobility sector coverage globally. Brian, thanks so much for joining me today.
Thanks, Jamie. It's always great chatting with you.
You can read more about Boston Consulting Group's survey and its findings at autonews.com. That's Daily Drive for today. I'm Jamie Butters.
And I'm Kellen Walker. Thanks to Automotive News Coordinating Producer Jake Neer, as well as our own Aji LaForest, Michael Martinez, Julie Walker, and Hannah Lutz for their reporting for today's podcast. You can get the latest news on electrification, retail buy-sells, and everything happening in the auto industry at autonews.com.
We'd love to hear from you. Let us know what you think of the show and the topics we covered today. Send us an email at dailydrive@autonews.com or leave us a voicemail at 313-444-2774. And if you enjoy the podcast, remember to like, leave a review, and subscribe so you never miss an episode.